On today's show, what would an offensive leap for Isaac Okoro look like? We'll answer that all and more. Want to thank you for making Locked On Cavs your first listen every day. Remember, we are free and available wherever you get your podcasts.
You are Locked On Cavs, your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast.
Music you heard on the way in, at least in audio form, is from our friends at Astro Radio. Check them out on Apple Music or Spotify. I'm Chris Manning, covering the Cavs and the NBA for places like Diamond Up Rocks and SB Nation's Fear the Sword. My co-host is Evan Damrell, covering the Cavs and the Cleveland sports scene at large for Facebook's Write Down Euclid. Producer Jake Stevens is not with us behind the virtual glass today, but he is here in spirit, and he did produce the show. Today's show is all about Isaac Okoro, Segment 1, what he was as an offensive player in Year 2, Segment 2, what are the actual pluses of his offensive game, and Segment 3, what would a leap in Year 3 of Okoro look like, at least on the offense. But Evan, how are you? Do you have a good weekend? Are you ready to talk about Isaac Okoro as we continue our August question series previews?
I mean, I spent my weekend dramatically differently than you did in terms of Isaac Okoro research, but yeah, I had a great weekend. How was yours?
I mean, I'm dog sitting a wonderful puppy, and
yeah, you
sent
me a cute video the other day.
It did. I'm watching lots of Okoro tape. Tottenham, the Premier League is back. Myself, and just very excited about that. Bill DiFilippo's Man City won on Sunday. You know, good vibes all around to a Guardians game on Friday. We're doing great.
Bill DiFilippo's modeling for Penn State apparel now these days. Like, it's been a wild weekend for so many people. I got fired and I came back.
You're just a non-fungible token, Evan. Let's move on to the important reason, Isaac Okoro. So we look at him as an offensive player, and I think everyone has the same reaction. It is that Isaac Okoro is, I think it's fair to say, not a particularly useful offensive player, not a particularly good offensive player. That is, I think, true based on 2 years of Okoro. Shooting remains the biggest problem. 35% on threes last year. That's up from 29% as a rookie. He's a little bit below league average for wing as a shooter. It's 36% on corner threes, which is the 32nd percentile of wing, so significantly below league average. He takes a ton of corner threes. He's in the top 20% of wings that take corner threes, and he's not making a ton of them, so that is not great. There are things about his offensive game we will look at that and talk about that. I think there are some positives. I think when you look at the shooting, though, Evan, we look at kind of what he is. I think the big thing right now is the teams have decided they can leave him alone in space, and they are comfortable that he cannot exploit it. There is not a counter that he has in his game that is really good enough to massage this and make it function the way the Cavs would like if he's going to be a guy that plays a lot of minutes for them.
Yeah, Isaac Okoro is tricky to kind of really forecast, at least, what his offensive ceiling or capability will be, because we've talked about this a lot on the show. There's times last season where we saw more of the complete package where Okoro was functional as a cutter. He was able to provide you some corner shooting or even shooting at the top of the perimeter. But more often than not, like Chris said, teams treat him like a non-factor on the offensive side of the ball. And that's a liability for the Cavs, especially for a team that already is a below average team in terms of three-point shooting, a team that likes to deploy using two traditional big men who like probably be best at the five, but they work really well together, and Evan Mobley and Jared Allen, and then if you factor in Larry Markkanen as well, it's another big body. So like, you want to be able to impose your will and this identity that you have on the offensive side of the ball. And yes, there's a ton of upside with it defensively, and I think that's where Okoro really comes into play here, but offensively, it just kind of throws a wrench in a lot of things, and I think you're asking Darius Garland to do a lot more. You're gonna have to ask Evan Mobley to do a lot more. You need to find spacing somewhere. And we saw the Leafs, but like you said, until now, he's just been kind of up and down and incomplete. And I'm willing to give him the benefit of the doubt for one more season, but I keep saying this, it's a make or break year for him this upcoming season, offense, especially on the offensive side of the ball.
Yeah, I think defensively, we'll talk about some of, I think, the ways his, I think later on, how his defense can fuel some of his offense. But it's worth noting that aside from the three-point shooting, there are little things about his offensive game that I think are worth considering here. I did a ton of film and looked at a bunch of the numbers.
Give the exact percentage of how much film you watch in terms of offensive possessions.
Well, just in terms of his shots, I would say I watch like
the audience. 80, I raise my eyebrow.
I probably watched like 85% of his shot attempts last year. Just like rip, just binged them like a Netflix show. So effective plus minus in offense last year, it's negative one. That's up from -3.1 as a rookie. So like the data says he's improved. -1 is around where Gary Harris is, Grant Williams, Lou Dort, Ricky Rubio is in that range as well, which is kind of interesting. And I think as a tangent for when we could do a Ricky Rubio episode this month, Ricky Rubio's impact last year was a ton about defense and less about the offense. Okoro is a very low usage guy, just 12.1% usage. That's very, very low. Does have a good assist to usage ratio for wings. Has a below average turnover rate though, but that's just tangential. Maybe that tells you secondary creation isn't super high. What he likes to do when he's not shooting and actually has a ball in his hands, he likes to reject screens and goes the opposite way. What you see him do is try to maximize that space and use his burst to get going. Evan, the other thing that really stuck out to me, and I think this is maybe like the bigger concern for me macro wise, aside from the shooting issue. He does not really feel like he has two-man chemistry with anyone else on this team, or like offense. Like maybe, yes, like Darius Garland on fast breaks, and we'll talk about his transition play in segment two. But like there are some early season one-offs where like he would get a quick DHO from Jared Allen and go. He would get a quick pass from Jared Allen and Allen would screen for him and he would go. But it just doesn't feel like he has chemistry or is in sync with what is going on around him. And he's often just like left standing in the corner. And then some of the things where he theoretically could do some work, like get to the rim, attack closeouts, attack a defender whose hips are at a weird angle and he can blow by them and use his strength. Mm-hmm. It just doesn't like get to happen. And he just often is standing there like not doing anything.
I mean, he does have some familiarity. Did you watch the Overtime Elite video with him and Colin Sexton shooting in the open gym with those guys?
Yes.
Former teammate, as noted, Colin Sexton. He does have some familiarity with him in that regard. But, yeah, I think that's a good way to put it, where Okoro looks so off, but lost at times offensively, and he kind of diagnosed the situation himself midway into the season last year where he isn't used to playing off ball so much and having to rely on others to create his shots and opportunities for him, where he's more or less used to kind of using his strength, athleticism, and just overall talent, like in physicality, especially at the high school and college level, to get his buckets and get where he needs to be. So he's a work in progress, and I think maybe the luxury of the Cavs kind of having this established pecking order. We talked about this a little bit kind of at the onset of this month, especially when we're focusing on Colin Sexton, just the two-guard depth in general, is the Cavs kind of have figured out their identity of who they want to be as a team on both ends of the floor. Now they can zero in on some of these like role players that you hope could be high-end impact players on both ends of the floor, or at least especially on the offensive side of the ball, to help you maintain pace with other teams as you grind them down defensively with your just alien front court, as you put it. And there's ways to go about this, and I'm willing to give Okoro the benefit of the doubt because maybe the coaching staff is working with him on this and just kind of addressing some of these issues and concerns. But it does make you wonder what his shelf life could be in Cleveland if he doesn't show a dramatic improvement, because the Cavs are a team that kind of are ready to and primed to take that next step. Yes, they are still rebuilding and figuring out who they are as a young team, but like they can't let Isaac Okoro be a reason why they're held back, and like they kind of got to figure this out sooner instead of later too.
Yeah, well, let's put a pin in that specifically, because that's going to be, I think, a crux of a lot of segment three and like what a leap mm-hmm. would look like and how he could play himself into more concrete plans. The last thing I will note about his offense last year that stood out to me. So he is in the 90th percentile, so the upper amount of guys that take shots at the rim among wings. So like when he of his shots, he's taking a ton at the rim. The problem is that he's below average in terms of field goal percentage at the rim, 46%. So like there are some there are other spots as well. There are just sometimes points being left on the board. And look, I we should also just say we are not like going to tell you we are shot doctors or experts. Like I can't tell you exactly what is like wrong in the structure of a core shot. It often looks mm-hmm. inconsistent to me, but like there's some it is notable that like when he got asked about like where he goes from at his media availability at the end of the year, it was like, this is about offense for him. I think he understands it. I think the team understands this. Yeah. I think everyone and who is tangentially aware of the Cleveland Cavaliers understands that Okoro's future as like a guy that can make it not like matter for the Cavs, make a bunch of money in this league, is really dependent on how his offense comes through or doesn't come through, and that's going to dictate a lot of what comes from. All right, after the break though, we're going to look through Okoro and just ask, okay, are there things about his offensive game that are actually pluses, or is he like Andre Roberson of this era? I'm going to say my opinion is that there are some pluses, but they are very circumstantial. So we'll talk about that after this. But first, going to tell everyone about Built Bar. Built Bar, if you haven't tried them yet, they have a new Built Puff. It is the chocolate cookie dough chunk puff. They have a light and chewy texture, real cookie dough chunks. And of course, they're covered in 100% real chocolate. Delicious, indulgent cookie dough covered in chocolate. Built has done it again. You get all the joys of eating cookie dough without the hassle of making it. And it's healthy for you. It has 160 calories, a whopping 15 grams of protein. Type really fast and go to Built.com to snag a box for you and the family. It will be the perfect treat. Or you can find a really good hiding place and just hoard them for yourself. What's great about Built is that all of their bars are made with collagen protein, which your body absorbs more efficiently and provides tons of health benefits, something that tastes good and is good for you. You're going to love the new Cookie Dough Chunk Puff, whether you need a snack for your workout, a late night treat, or just need to grab a quick bite. Built is the perfect protein bar, and they taste better than a candy bar. Ditch the calories, the fat, the sugar. Grab yourself a Built Bar. Go to Built.com. Use the promo code LOCKED15 and get 15% off your order. Again, the promo code is LOCKED15. All right, back here on Locked On Cavs. You want a great second listen today or just something else to check out, go subscribe to the Ultimate Cleveland Sports Show on YouTube. The Adam the Bull, Garrett Bush, Jay Crawford. They're doing a ton of great stuff over there. Check them out. And Brad Sellers is on there on Fridays talking Cavs stuff. So check that out. Okay. Evan, I'm going to ask you this first because you have not like inundated your brain with lots of Isaac Okoro things and like where this is just like ended up being what you thought about for a lot of this weekend. But what to you, if you had to name like two of them, let's just say two or three, say some nice things about Isaac Okoro's offense. If you're making the case that there is something to his offensive game, we can say, okay, there's at least this positive.
I think there are at times, like I said, a positive is you see the vision of what he can be as a player, and you look at guys like Gerald Wallace, who just like maybe more like a different style of play, especially with Gerald Wallace with the Bobcats when he was more crash than anything. You could see a player like that for Isaac Okoro, but he uses his physicality to get to the line. I think that's a promising trend in the right direction. I think him utilizing baseline cuts and the Cavs kind of getting creative and finding ways to make him more viable, at least on offense where he isn't a total liability, or maybe just maybe if he's able to uptake that three-pointer of his, so teams have to kind of keep it honest, at least on him defensively, and like kind of maybe bite on fakes like that. He can pump fake and then drive to the basket and get easier looks like that because he likes to take corner threes, as you noted. But Okoro, there's that, and then the fact that like he does have, like, I wouldn't say he's like an elite playmaker. He can be your primary initiator, despite what maybe Point Okoro fanatics, if they actually exist, can say.
I think they've been They've pulled like a Saul Goodman, like moved to Nebraska and are like cooking Cinnabons. Like they are off the grid.
Yeah, a little off the grid, but that's fine. But he is competent enough offensively in terms of playmaking ability where if he's driving to the basket, he knows to kick it back out to somebody on the perimeter, or he, like you said, he does reject screens a lot, but there were instances and times I noticed during the season where like he can be a smart enough passer, at least not in pick and rolls, but just like dumping it off the big men or just making sure if there's a guy down low who has like a size mismatch or advantage, like Okoro's smart enough to make those reads. Like he can make a basic rudimentary reads that like you can get some tertiary playmaking from. Like that's a positive. If he tightens up the handle a lot more, that's a little bit more reliable. But like you see the glimpses in the glimmer, you're just hoping he can build off that momentum and make it more a part of his game.
Yeah, that's one of the things that will, there's a clip that I found of a drive that he missed that I ended up tweeting, but we'll talk about like some of the limitations there. So here's what I would say is a positive. I think he's a good transition player.
That's a good one too.
Yeah, leaks out well off a rebound. He's got him. He's pretty quick in the open court. When he gets seals, he is very able to push the pace. Use that speed and get in out there. Has a good Euro step in transition to kind of make a move and get to the rim, load up a little bit. There is no real game other than that. One of the weaknesses here is that he doesn't have like an in-between game. Like there's not a floater. Like he would really benefit from like a floater to open some things up, but he can at least pressure you at the rim. Good attack and closeouts when the opportunity presents himself. I mean, remember that dunk he had on Jokic? He's had the poster thing against the Hawks last year. Like when he gets around a corner, and when a defender gives him a little room to work, the guy isn't squared up with him and is kind of moving his feet and kind of walling him off, he can beat that guy, get to the rim, and do some damage. Powerful dunker. When he gets that momentum going, he can do some damage there. Did at times, I think more than I remembered, have some good cuts from the corner. There's a game against the Magic where like the Magic's defensive line slid way up and he slid behind the back big and got an easy dunk. Like there's stuff for that where you can see he can make those at least obvious cut reads, which is a positive. Also a good offensive rebounder for a wing. But like we're kind of like talking around stuff, Evan. I think the problem here is that like we look at this, it's just like there's like little stuff that's good, but it's like tangential. There's not like an identity. Yeah. It doesn't lead to like having Okoro having an offensive identity for himself.
Yeah, it's still a work in progress. And I think just, again, a caveat, he had an unprecedented rookie season, so he's been kind of been a trial by fire. Like, last season was, like, his first true training camp. Like, I know there were still COVID limitations, but they were able to actually kind of utilize some more normal-ish things last year. So it's a little bit of an abridged rookie season, and then his sophomore season was a little more normal, and then his third season will be, again, another normal year, hopefully, for him. But, like you said, there are moments and glimpses of like, oh yeah, I can see this, I can see that, I can see the vision and the complete package, I can see how he can be impactful, and I'll touch on that more of like how he can be more of a high impact player for the Cavs heading into next season, because you noted on a lot of things that are positive. It's just finding that combination of all those things to form a complete identity on just not just the offense but defense as well, because I think, like you mentioned, he's really, really good in really, really good in transition. I'll stick with that. Like he's a quick player, he's a smart player, he's really aggressive, he's really strong. Like he can utilize that to the best of his ability, where he can get easier looks on offense in transition so that he can make an impact on the offensive side of the ball, and then like he can still utilize more energy on the defensive side of the ball, and he's a little bit more, and he can maintain that low maintenance status when the Cavs are on offense.
Yeah, the transition thing is like so, I think, useful, because that, like, I think especially in the context of the Cavs, if we're going to say there's a role for him to do so on offense, like we've talked about Sexton is like the speed element the team doesn't really have from anyone else. He's the other guy that is like very willing to just like get up the floor and go and like streak. Jetty Osmond will do this as well at times. Like Jetty will kind of go, but Jetty likes to like dribble a little bit. He likes to set up for a transition three. Like Okoro is willing to just like leak out, run a straight like route down the middle of down the sideline and get the ball and go.
Yeah,
well, it's like he's just running a Hail Mary. He's just running a streak. He's just going, and like you will see him see the ball, like he has an ability, or shown a willingness at least, maybe that's a better way of putting it, to like see that the ball has gone back to the Cavs. Like let's say Darius Garland gets a steal, or like they get a rebound and the ball is being pushed. He just goes. He doesn't wait. And sometimes that results in him like the defense gets back and a good team will track him back and he doesn't get like a clear run to the rim, or can't be the guy that then makes like the second pass on the break or whatever. And he just ends up in the corner and you don't produce anything. But I at least like that he's not like just meandering up and like standing in the corner. Like he's at least trying to put some pressure there. Like lesser players, I think, would just stand there. I think that the other thing is that like I think some of these offensive pluses are just end up being covered up, maybe is a good way to put it.
Obscured.
Look at you using big words. The fact that like teams just leave him in space means a lot of this stuff is just like it doesn't exist unless like the circumstances are perfect, and that's like that is like the problem. Like that his pluses are not enough to overcome the fact that like teams are just like, you can pass Isaac a ball. That's cool. That's fine. You can throw the ball him in the corner and let him shoot. We're cool with that.
Yeah, it's you really noticed it when Cleveland was playing Boston, which is, I think, a huge uh-oh for the Cavs because they have the players and who have the skill set and ability to really frustrate Darius Garland. Like, you can throw Jaylen Brown at him. You can throw Jason Tatum at him. You could use Grant Williams really creatively as well. Like, the Celtics are, like, a uniquely equipped team that could really frustrate Cleveland and kind of counterbalance the Cavs' overwhelming size on the interior by just frustrating Garland because he doesn't have a reliable partner in the backcourt with him. And I think that's also kind of why the Cavs maybe went and made that move for Caris LeVert too, because Isaac Okoro couldn't really like take that leap midway into his second season after Colin Sexton went down. We're like, okay, he's more of a reliable offensive threat, especially on the perimeter, where defenses have to at least maintain some type of tag on him, or like, okay, like maybe they're not going to be completely honest on him, but there's times like a Okoro will burn them for that, or like defenses were like, okay, we can't overcommit to defending Garland and leaving a Okoro open. So like that's unfortunately kind of how it just went for the Cavs. But you touched on it a little bit. I don't think he's like mechanically broken in terms of a jump shot. Like his shot's just flat whenever I watch it. And I think that's the issue. Like there's times he gets air underneath the ball and like the shot goes in a lot easier, but it's just like Okoro for some reason just like looks like he's heaving a medicine ball sometimes at the basket instead of just shooting things in motion. And there's tweaks and obviously adjustments you can make there. And I think, like you said, him addressing the fact that he needs to hone in on his offensive game really, it really speaks to the reality of the situation of where he's at as a player, and I think intrigues me enough at least to see where he'll be as a player. But like that's like the biggest thing is if he's a shooter, I think at least a little bit more respectable shooter, I think everything else will start to fall into place a little bit.
Yeah, let's put a pin in that because that's what we're going to talk about in segment three. What would a leap look like? What could lead to him improving on offense? We'll start with the three-point shooting because that is the crux of it. We'll do that right after this. All right, back here in Locked On Cavs, I'm Chris Manning. That's Evan Damrell. Let's start with the three-point shooting. This is the thing, Evan, that at least somewhat, if he can be a guy that can damage you on offense, not only is he going to loosen things up for everyone else, and like he can then tack closeouts, he can get some easy assists from that. You know, this is how he can at least have some more function out on the offense. It is also one of the things that like maybe over time, it becomes a harder place to hide. Like teams last year would say, okay, they played the Warriors, Steph Curry, you're just going to sit on a court. You're not going to have to do very much. We're going to let you rest. Luka Doncic, you can just defend him in the corner and like, you can kind of defend him and close out, but you don't like always have to. Trae Young, you can do that. Or like what Boston did, and Boston had, you know, historically good defense last year, was at times have Grant Williams slide off of him and be in help defense and like put another body in the paint. Like teams use him as a way to either rest a guy and kind of put someone in a situation or like have someone muck up the paint a little bit. If he can get to like league average for wings and just be enough of a threat that teams like actually close out on him and actually pay attention to him, like that to me just unlocks so much. And look, some of the positives at the end of the year, I know people will say, oh, like look at these numbers from a certain stretch, blah, blah, blah. We need to see it for a real season for us to really believe that any of that's real.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think the shooting is a huge thing. At least I'm not saying like he needs to become like a plus-plus shooter, like a Darius Garland type level.
Just
or like
average.
Have like this average. Average or slightly below average, where he can be a player that is all around offensively. Like, yes, he is really good in transition. He is good on the interior. If he becomes a better finisher of the basket, I think that's the other thing too, is like finishing at the basket is like a huge thing too, where like you noted that in the first segment, like he gets a lot of good looks at the rim and he just doesn't finish them more often than not. And I think if he becomes a more solid all-around player offensively, he can fit best on this Cavs team when he's not asked to score. But if like the ball ends up in his hands, or if like there's a certain scenario like the shot clock's winding down, like it's not like a total liability to have Isaac Okoro out there because he plays really hard on defense. Like JB Bickerstaff noted that in Okoro's rookie season, they just kind of asked him to play hard and defend the opposing team's best perimeter player. And then if he fouled, that's fine. And then the second year, the game really slowed down for Okoro, and he could really be a high impact player on that end because he understands Cleveland's schematics and defensive concepts and kind of understands just how the intricacies of certain NBA offenses work because it's a copycat league. And people like to point out like the Andre Iguodala comparisons. I've mentioned Gerald Wallace. Like Wallace is a really good rebounder who played hard on both ends. I think Iguodala was a really, really good player who played hard on both ends. He was more of a better passer compared to Wallace. Okoro could be a similar player like that. Not those players exactly, but a dude who plays hard, but he's low usage, and he's kind of the enforcer on defense and the garbage man on offense. Like, if the Cavs can find that niche for him where he's just respectable on every spot of the floor, where, like, teams have to be honest with him when defending him, that's where he can really push this Cavs team to the next level. I don't know where else they're going to get an offense. I mean, there's obviously other avenues where they can get an offensive punch from. There's Ochai Agbaji, Caris LeVert, maybe Colin Sexton if he's back as well, too. Ricky Rubio when he's healthy as well. There's a foundation and a groundwork for Okoro to work. It's just he needs to become slightly either average or slightly below average in terms of shooting. I think, like I said, a lot of this stuff will fall back into place for him, and then he won't be a liability on the offensive side of the ball.
Yeah, the defensive part of this, I think, is the right place to go, because I think defense fueling offense is another way to look at this. So he's not, he is a defender that I think is like very solid, but I don't think this is necessarily a guy who's going to become like an all defense guy. And I think that's, we sort of see that because this isn't a guy that generates a lot of turnovers. He's a 1.3% steal rate each of his first two seasons. That was about average as a rookie, and then it was a tick below average last year. So we get to just about under one steal per game. I think, Evan, he has the frame and the instincts to make more aggressive plays for steals. I think the Cavs have defenders in Allen and in Mobley at the back line that could allow him to gamble a little bit more, to allow him to pressure and try to create some more of these turnover mm-hmm. opportunities. I think if he can just generate like a few more moments of generate some of this stuff more and use his frame and maximize his motor, because this is a guy that, like, I don't think gets tired. I don't think
plays hard every single time he's out there.
He like really can sustain a lot of minutes. Like, we've seen that for 2 years now. That would really help. Some of this does feel, in his to kind of note it, I think does feel a little bit scheme related. The Cavs like have run a pretty there's not a lot of real aggressive stuff built into what they did last year. It is very much where you're gonna come, we're gonna like take in all of your pressure and then bounce it back the other way. It's sort of like taking that and mirroring it back the other way. It's not mm-hmm. trying to like intercept it and go. Evan, the other thing I will say that I think is the last place to go here is that he does leave some points on the board, and I think at the free throw line in particular. So both years, 90th in the 90th percentile or above of wings in terms of how many shooting fouls he draws. This is according to Clean the Glass. But he's below average in terms of and one, so he's not finishing enough on these opportunities, and that's a lot of stuff at the rim. And he's in the 30th percentile last year, so the bottom chunk of wings in terms of free throw percentage. He is pretty consistently like leaving points on the board where, like, if his free throw percentage gets like up to like 80% and he can finish him in ones and dunk, like, for, because like I think as strong as he is, there are times where he gets in the lane and it's like his attempt at scoring is not like going up for a dunk or drawing contact and at least getting the free throws. It is like trying to swoop around a guy and like get to the other side, or his strength isn't getting him the kind of shot he wants. He will get stymied in a way that you would maybe think he shouldn't because of the physicality he does have. So there are points left on the board to me when we mm-hmm. look at the free throw side of it. But the defense is probably the one I would say, and I'll ask you this. I think that's the one that I feel like is more realistic to jump. Maybe the free throws happen, but I think the defensive side of it is maybe where this could start. But what would you think? If you could say one is more likely, what would you say?
I think the defense will obviously improve just because he's going to get better as a player. I really want to hone in on his finishing at the rim. Mm-hmm. I hope he can uptick that a little bit. What was the percentage you said? Last season, was it 48%?
So at the rim, 63%, but that's in the 46th percentile among wings. So he's a tick below average, and that's with him taking in the upper 2% of wings. He's taking mm-hmm. more shots at the wing than like all but 2% of wings in the league.
Gotcha. So in college, he was finishing at 64% of his shots at the rim, which it tracks so far for what it is. If he's slightly able to uptick that a little bit, and I think, again, yes, the free throw shooting is kind of like my biggest bugaboo with him, where like he leaves a lot of points on the board, as you noted, where I don't think he's going to have like a Colin Sexton type leap, but if he's able to become a competent an average free throw shooter, an average three-point shooter, an all-around NBA player, just like where he's not like super high impact in terms of just the things, but like he's reliable on everything too, where he's not a liability, but like the free throw line's a bigger thing too, so like he can use that physicality and strength and ability to finish at the rim, so when he does get at the line, he's able to contribute to the Cavs offensively too. Like, there's a lot of things that he can work on. Like, there's just like a lot of odd question marks. We're like, like, we're kind of like grimacing, like you said, we're skating around some of the subjects and talking about the positives, but like the foundation is there, the vision is there. I think there's ways he can be impactful on both ends of the floor, defense being like the crux of what he is as a player. But I think you make a really smart assessment where him translating it to the offensive side of the ball and just becoming a more sound player offensively can really just push this Cavs team to some pretty interesting heights, because he's an interesting tool and like an interesting player that has like an interesting skill set and that like works well with Evan Mobley and Jared Allen on defense, and it gives JB Bickerstaff a lot of creative opportunities too on that end of the floor. It's just you need a little bit of something to translate to offense, because you just can't do hockey substitutions on the fly in basketball.
Yeah, the college note about the rim, I think, is worth ending on, because one of the things that I think, if there's a reason to be optimistic about him coming out of Auburn, it's like you would see him beat his defenders and be able to get around guys and get to lane and get dunks off, and you would see some of that in the tape. I think that adjustment in the NBA, maybe it's spacing because the Cavs have been cramped, maybe it's just like, you know, it's a higher level of athlete. I think it's probably some of that. It's just like he is not able to kind of get those opportunities the same way he was in college. And there's maybe ways to massage that. There's maybe ways that, and shooting, I think, certainly would open that up. But that's one of the things that I think has maybe limited some of his offensive effectiveness, because those drives, a lot of those drives that he had, they don't exist. Like, there's a drive he had on Steph Curry that was like exactly what you want. He's able to use his shoulder. He's able to get inside, use his frame, and get a clean look off and score. It is just like those things are come way. Like everything, it's like
between.
Yeah, it's everything with him in offense is not as much as you would like it to be, and that's tricky.
It is tricky. I think there's ways the Cavs can make it easier for him. I think using him as a cutter on the baseline is really smart. Maybe finding more lineups, maybe you're really hoping for Evan Mobley to take like a serious leap in terms of three-point shooting, where you can provide spacing and lanes for Isaac to kind of operate, because again, he's not going to become a plus-plus three-point shooter. I think we can throw the book out on that, where like he's going to be a high-impact three-point shooter, but like Isaac can find ways to be impactful, and maybe it's going to be the Cavs looking at the rest of the roster saying like, okay, how can we adjust things to make Isaac not as huge of a liability on offense, and then he possesses the physicality, size, and strength to defend 1-4, and then maybe give one of those guys who has to bust their ass even harder on offense a little more time to rest on defense, because Isaac is kind of covering for them a little bit.
Yeah, or like, does he develop, like, one of the things we didn't mention that isn't, it's not, it's kind of a speculative thing, and like, there's a much better player here, but like, that we're talking about, but like, Bruce Brown developed over time. Like, his shooting thing last year was on a very low volume, but he did shoot it better. But he also developed into a guy that was making reads out of cuts into the center lane. He was feeding bigs. He was getting like really, kept the ball moving and provided value that way. If Okoro can do some of that and not just like be chilling, that's a positive. All right, we're gonna end there. Yeah, like there's a way this can get better. We just there's some ifs that have to get there. Okay.
I need 15 to 20 games of just like tangible data and like footage of like just breaking down Isaac's game. Like, I'm really intrigued to see what he is as a player this year, because like, he possesses the skill set and package to be like a really good high impact player for the Cavs. I need to see it in year three to like firmly say like, yeah, the Cavs can hitch their wagon to this guy and commit some serious money to him as part of this playoff team.
We'll do like an X Factors episode at some point. I think he is. There are some obvious things that will shape this upcoming Cavs season. What happens with Okoro? What that means for the wings? Is probably under the radar, because he's not one of the leads of this team, but it is an under the radar thing. I think that will have an impact on where the Cavs go as the some of their guys, you know, age and the roster changes, and we'll see how he fits into that. Tier three contract extension eligible after this season. It's pretty interesting time for Isaac Okoro. All right, that's going to be it for today. I want to thank you for making Lockdown Cavs your first listen every day. This episode was produced by Jake Stevens. We are going to be back on Wednesday talking about if the Cavs have actually good depth on the roster. Hope you tuned in for that. For your second listen, get up to date on the latest news and rumors in the NBA in just 30 minutes every day with Locked On NBA. Locked On NBA is your daily NBA update in just 30 minutes. I believe Evan is on the Monday show this week talking Colin Sexton and a guy from Akron. So if you want more Evan, Locked In NBA. Go check that out. I was on last week with Tony. He's talking about Colin Sexton. So if you want to go back and listen to that, nothing has changed with Colin Sexton. So there you go. If you want more Cavs, we got two things right there for you. But until Wednesday, I'm Chris. That's Evan. Again, shouts to Jake for producing. Peace out.